Yo, check it out, yo. I'm a dinosaur now. See that? I went from a robot man to a robot dinosaur.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WTF at TFW. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch Salty Bet, but it's a useful word, so I'm just going to say it right now. I'm feeling pretty salty. I'm joined by Seth Buzzard.
Hey, how do you feel about the movie A Thin Blue Line?
Well, I feel like it's probably the best movie that's ever been made, because everything with little blue lions added to it is a vast improvement. Did you not see the photo I made of the upcoming revamp of TFW 2005?
Yes.
Did you not see me fix Crace's, like, you know, broken old-ass, old-timey, old-internet pre-order 66 site? I brought that up to the real world with some blue lines.
Well, you went even farther, and you implemented curved blue lines.
I know, I added a few of those because I thought you really needed the help, so I did a few, you know, a few loop-de-loops to go with the crisscrosses. Fixing the internet.
Once you mentioned Salty Bet, I went to Salty Bet once before I knew what it was. Someone tweeted a link to it and said, "This is how I'm wasting my weekend." And I was like, "What?" And I looked at it and I didn't understand what was happening. And then I stopped looking at it. And then a couple days later, I found out what it was all about.
I heard too much about Salty Bet before I ever got to watch Salty Bet. So now I don't want to watch it because I've built up too much of an image of it in my mind.
It's a very simple website design.
It's just Mugen. I know it's just random Mugen, but
yeah. And there's like, there's a box to enter the amount you want to bet, and then a button to make your bet.
Yeah.
And a chat. There's a chat window on the side, running down the side.
I heard too much about it, and I saw too many people tweeting about it, and now I'm like, it's become Doctor Who for me, or I heard too much about it, and now I gotta step away for a while before I can look at it.
Oh, they announced a new Doctor a couple weeks ago.
I know, and I saw he's an old guy. And then I heard that a whole bunch of fans of current Doctor Who were all like, "But he's not hot." And I was like,
I was kind of happy to see it was an older guy, because they had been on this track of like going younger and younger.
Yeah.
And there was early in Matt Smith's run, there was a bit of dialogue that I thought was kind of cool, where he kind of addresses how the early Doctors were like old men. And now they're getting younger and younger. And he's sort of like musing that he's getting older, because he was like over 900 years old at that point. And how when you're young, you want to be an adult. You want to be older.
Yeah.
So his generations were affected by that. And so he was getting these older man bodies. And then as you get older, you want to be young again, so that's why he's getting younger and younger. And I thought, oh, you know, that's an interesting way to think about it, and I accept that.
Yeah, I like the idea. And I mean, I heard stuff about John Hurt getting involved, and that was actually drawing me to look at the show. And then I went and watched some clips, and then I kind of caught on that John Hurt is not like, it looks like he's probably not going to be like a mainstay long-term part of the show or something.
No, I think he's going to be a big part of the 50th anniversary special coming up in November.
I'm going to watch that. If I can find a torrent of it after it airs, because I have no idea how to watch it for real, I'm going to watch that because it sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And the last time I almost watched Doctor Who was a Christmas special, and I actually enjoyed what I watched.
Well, I've sought out, and I think I've seen all of the multiple Doctor episodes. Maybe there's one, I think there might be one I haven't seen, but like all the classic Doctor Who's, whenever they did special stories with multiple Doctors at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've made an effort to seek those out just because they're kind of crazy and fun. And, like, I loved the Three Doctors, which was the first time they did it. And it was the original Three Doctors. But, like, the original first guy was, like, very ill at the time. Like, he died not long afterwards. So, like, that Doctor was like trapped in like this time vortex, so he can only kind of interact with the other two via a view screen.
Yeah.
And I just like the whole deal. Like, so the second and third Doctor immediately don't like each other, and they're sort of bickering and cutting each other down. then the original Doctor appears on the screen. He's like, oh, this is what I become, a clown and a fop. And then just like puts both of them in their place. And
I like the theme of self-loathing that runs through that as well. Like this, I don't know.
Well, I saw a clip with David Tennant talking about this upcoming special, because he's in it, so it's going to be the 10th and 11th Doctors on an adventure together. And I guess they approached Christopher Eccleston, but he was busy or something, or he was just being a butt about it. And that would have been great if they had the three modern Doctors, but anyway. Tennant said that the way they're playing it is the 10th and 11th Doctors, like, it's not like the past times they've done it where they've always been antagonistic toward each other. Like, these two Doctors are like, this is awesome, let's go have an adventure. Good to see you again. Let's go.
Now I want to check that thing out. The whole setup of it sounds cool. And by the way, now that we've done it, that's, you guys have to wait an entire year before you can complain about how much we don't talk about Doctor Who again. Just add to the listeners.
Who's complaining?
I don't know, but I you know, maybe in case it happens.
It just feels like somebody probably was.
I know someone in the, like, maybe they weren't typing it, but they were thinking, like, I can't believe these guys keep talking about Breaking Bad and they don't talk about Doctor Who. I can't believe this guy's into Kamen Rider, but he won't talk about Doctor Who. Yeah. Ah, he said that Kamen Rider's gonna dropkick the TARDIS. Ah, why does he keep writing it dr.who?
Yeah, that's a good way to get people worked up.
Well, if I get into Doctor Who hardcore, I think I'm just going to keep writing it dr.who because it seems to get people really angry for a really, really silly reason. Like, it would be the same as if I got really angry if someone kept,
it's like the Lego Legos thing.
Or if someone just,
people
like,
just kept, get really tight about it.
If someone kept writing it Transformers, like, over and over again. Like, that's just how they spell it. I don't know. Something about getting under someone's skin that way. It has gotten under my skin in past, and then I grew to respect the subtlety of getting under someone's skin by doing such a simple thing. Anyway. I'm feeling salty, so let's talk about a salty figure. I also haven't used the word salty on this podcast before, so I'm going to overuse it now. We've got a new Megatron variant revealed via eBay. Apparently, I got shown this, and I assumed it was a custom, and then someone told me this actually is from an account that tends to get, like, stolen Chinese toys. So this might actually be happening. This is a Megatron figure that is themed after Calvin Johnson Megatron. Calvin Megatron is a football player who apparently is a cyborg. And his designation is CJ81. That's like the serial number on the back of his neck. And this Megatron is in his trademark purple and silver grid colors. And comes with a football that has a Decepticon logo on it. The football has been molded to mount inside, basically to wedge into the forearm armor of the IDW Stealth Bomber Megatron toy. I think this to me is everything the Linkin Park Soundwave wished it was, but isn't. This is a dumb reason to do anything, but it's being done in a way that's visually interesting, and I want to believe that Calvin the Johnson Megatron came up with this deco himself as a huge fan of Transformers, even though I know that's not the case. Because this actually looks interesting on its own, and it comes with a football, and it's goofy and fun and silly, and it's also licensed to someone's name, whereas Linkin Park Soundwave is boring and licensed to someone's name. That's my viewpoint on it.
Well, you realize, for European listeners, they have a very different mental image of what you just described.
Oh, sorry, it's a rugby ball. Rugby is basically American football. I know I just started something. I can tell by your silence you weren't sure if you should say something about it.
Well, I was trying to, like, how do I want to deal with this? Because, I'm not offended by that, but it made me think, like, a running gag on Bill Burr's podcast is he loves to pick fights with rugby fans who pick fights with him. Like, yeah. I guess a lot of his European listeners, like, will talk mess about American football and be like, oh, rugby's way more manly because they don't wear pads. And then, like, Burr will go on his podcast and make fun of rugby players, or not make fun of them, but, like, be like, okay, it's a completely different game. Like, take any one of the 500-pound linebackers and run them full speed at one of your rugby players, and we'll see who wants to wear pads and a helmet. He goes, and the helmet isn't there to protect you. It's to turn your head into a weapon.
Well, clearly, this Megatron is an American football player because he's got knee pads and whatnot.
But yeah, like, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's okay if this is an actual real thing that comes out. I mean, it seems obvious to do, because if this guy, for an entire football season, once a week, is having the name Megatron repeated over and over again, why wouldn't Hasbro acknowledge that in a fun way?
Yeah, and they're doing it in a fun way. Like, you just look like this guy has little red stars all over his forearms and his feet. He's got Nike logos on his boots, so it looks like he's wearing shoes. Well,
apparently the color scheme is based on Nike shoes that were named for this guy already. So that explains the color deco.
I'd heard that apparently these aren't the quote unquote proper colors for this guy's team, but I think that's more that's the team's fault, because this is a damn good color scheme, and if they don't have these colors, like, they're lost.
It's a choice then. Like, let's just assume this is a legitimate real product. So if Hasbro wanted to do something affiliated with this guy's name, then they had two choices. Do they go with the Nike thing? Or do they go to the NFL? And then if they go to the NFL, they also have to go to the Detroit Lions and get more licenses from more agencies.
Yeah.
So with Nike, then they only have to deal with him and Nike. If they went NFL, then it would be him, NFL, Detroit Lions.
Also, the Lions' color scheme is clearly a Thundercracker or Autobot color scheme, and it's not nearly as cool.
Silver and blue.
Yeah, it's okay, but this is way cooler. Like, they should just change. I mean, like, if they already have a guy from the Megatron family on their team, I mean...
Yeah, if it was primarily silver with some blue, then it wouldn't look that different from any other Megatron.
Yeah. But this isn't any other Megatron. This is Calvin Megatron.
This isn't any other
Calvin
Megatron.
Calvin Johnson Megatron.
Well, I talked about this on the show last football season. I'm watching a 49er game, and one of the announcers was trying so hard to attach Optimus Prime as a nickname to the 49er quarterback, Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, yeah, I remember this conversation.
Oh, he was trying so hard. And now it's almost too bad that he wasn't successful, because then Hasbro could make a Colin Kaepernick Optimus Prime.
Also, that would have been great, because they technically would have then probably used the Orion Pax mold, which is a damn good figure. And that would have made for a great two-pack. Megatron and Orion Pax all done up in football colors, armed with footballs.
Yeah. And once we're talking about sports, something that... was brought to my attention, speaking of the Bill Burr podcast, that is hilarious. Or not hilarious, but kind of messed up and therefore funny. The Super Bowl was the 49ers versus the Ravens.
Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick is the 49er quarterback. I don't remember the name of the Ravens quarterback, because I am a very mild sports fan.
Thought you were American.
And I don't care about the Ravens. So the Ravens win, and usually the quarterback of the team that wins the Super Bowl gets tons of ad stuff. They become super famous, and they're in commercials and magazines and all that. Colin Kaepernick is everywhere. He's cover of Sports Illustrated. He has all these commercials, he's in all these magazines, and you would think the 49ers won the Super Bowl if you didn't know any better. And it must be a bummer for that Raven guy.
Aww. Yeah, well,
I don't care about the Ravens.
Calvin Johnson Megatron's Megatron figure.
It's a weird thing.
It's a weird thing, but it's one I actually kind of like, because it's fun. It's kind of fun. It's kind of neat. And then, like I said, it's like the antithesis, but on the same track of Linkin Park Soundwave, which is a dull, boring, silly thing that has no visual merit whatsoever. Whereas this guy's all purple and he's got a football.
Yeah, and assuming that this is correct, that it's based on a shoe color scheme, then that means the color scheme is based on something affiliated with the guy.
Yeah.
Unlike the Linkin Park one, which is just gold plastic.
Linkin Park Soundwave is real stupid.
Unless the gold is supposed to represent gold records. And then, yuck.
Well, anyone could be... any musician could be... I don't know.
That's a diss on Linkin Park, because that implies that they don't have any platinum records.
Oh! I don't know nothing about their discography.
They've got to have platinums.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
They have to have at least one platinum record.
I leave that up to listeners. So our resident Linkin Park historian, if you can come in and just let us know their gold and platinums.
I was going to say, or if you could just keep it to yourself.
No, I want to know.
And just be smug in your knowledge that you know, and we don't.
Anyway, that thing felt a whole lot like a new pick, but I felt it was more valuable than that. But we also still have new picks. And Seth, I want to start off with you, because you already told me what yours is.
Speaking of purple Decepticons...
Why?
Mastermind Creations. They've got a new Cyclops on the scene.
It's actually part of a much... like, it's a really weird concept. I kind of dig it because it's weird.
Steelian Scientist.
They're kind of all the same base figure.
Yeah. Yeah, because it, like... Does this say how big it's going to be?
Oh,
6.5 inches. It's significantly smaller.
Oh, yeah, it's not the size of Boat Cyclops.
Right, and he has hollow forearms.
Oh, great.
And hollow legs.
Great, great. I bet you hate it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, besides the hollow arms and legs, which always bugs me, the robot mode looks kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
The gun mode looks like there's a missing piece.
Yeah, the double barrel thing on the end, it makes sense to me in terms of if I was sitting down and writing that down of, hey, let's have two little barrels instead of one big one. I wouldn't see that as a bad thing on paper. But,
well, and it's also much shorter.
Yeah, I mean, it visually sticks out a lot.
Or like it doesn't stick out enough.
If those, yeah, exactly. If those barrels were a bit longer, I think people might have warmed up to it a bit more.
Well, and in this picture, it looks like they photoshopped it so it looks like the eye is glowing. Do we have any idea if the eye is going to actually glow, or are they just being deceptive?
I bet you it'll light pipe real well, because the other Cyclopses did. But that's kind of just based on the other one did it. I would be surprised if there's an LED stuck in there.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if they didn't do that to try to trick people.
That's some stylization. It can look all pretty-like. Well, as a Shockwave enthusiast, are you feeling any draw to it, given that he's turning into a gun and not a boat?
Well, I'll have to see what kind of prices it goes for. If it's cheap enough, and it's not going to be cheap. If it's inexpensive enough to be kind of impulsy, maybe I'll get it. But, I mean, that other third-party Shockwave is so amazing.
Oh, the Masterpiece size one.
Yeah. So, I don't really know if I need another third-party Shockwave. So, I mean, we'll see how the price on that goes.
Yeah. Well, have you taken a look at, like, the side-by-sides of the Steelian Scientist thing? Like, look at that Shockwave, and then look at the Brainstorm-styled Steelian Scientist they're doing.
I didn't see them side-by-side.
Like, click back and forth, and you'll see, like, the in the waist and in the legs, they got a lot of real matching parts.
Yeah, I thought you were saying that there was a picture of them next to each other.
I just meant click back and forth.
Flipping between two pictures. Yeah, I'm doing that.
Yeah. So, I think the idea is kind of, like, being, like, the idea of we're going to make a base body type and then make nothing but scientists out of it is like, an eccentricity that I really kind of like conceptually. I don't know if I'm going to, like, I'm not going in this going, like, and clearly the toys are all going to be beautiful, but the concept is so weird that something about it kind of clicks with me.
Well, it almost kind of puts me in the mind of, like, a video game situation where this is the scientist body type, and now you could customize it to make your scientist character.
And this is kind of neat, like, seeing, like, all the different stuff they've gotten out of it just between, like, even the Brainstorm and the Shockwave. Like, obviously there are bits and pieces that you know, are just kind of, like, plugged on. Perhaps there's even a bit of parts forming. But, I don't know. It's a neat concept. I totally understand, especially given that it just so happens that another Brainstorm is coming out from two other companies. That, you know, the character fatigue is probably hitting some people. But I, as I said in another podcast, like, I tend to look at this a little bit more company by company than character by character at times. And
and being smaller, it's going to be a more affordable option for people who just couldn't get the bigger one.
Yeah.
But they still want a Shockwave, like a more kind of high-end-ish Shockwave. But I just don't know if this is, like, accurate enough to really fill that gap.
I'm wondering if Mastermind will come up with some kind of, like, barrel extension piece to fully G1-ify that gun. Like, to give it the mono barrel with the gray extension.
Or Dr. Wu will get him.
Well, if they don't, yeah, Dr. Wu will most probably do it, because that's Dr. Wu's way.
Six party.
That's right. I've been to a couple six parties. They were pretty steamy.
They weren't salty?
No, not those. Well, some of you could get salty at a few of them if you want to.
Salty parties.
Yeah, go to a couple salty parties.
Everyone just starts, fun for anyone.
You just start scowling and hitting each other, but sometimes, you know, that's what you got to do.
Huh? Man, I actually like the sound of that. A scowling party?
Yeah.
Where just everyone just sort of, it's like a whole, like, big mob of people all sitting, like, not talking to, just glaring at each other. Nobody's talking.
Yeah, it's for the passive-aggressive to, you know, work out their aggression in a slightly less passive way.
Just a lot of hard inhales through the nose. Yeah. While they, like, very shallowy shaking your head, just real shallow shake, like just the real, like, just like that.
Anyone
that's
who,
the extent of conversation.
Well, anyone who finishes a full sentence realizes that they've moved beyond, they've learned what they needed to learn, and they leave the salty party.
Well, and the only communication between people that isn't hostile to each other is just like, kind of like tapping somebody's shoulder, like with the back of your hand, like one of those, like, back of the hand, like, get your attention pats. Yeah. And then you just go, can you believe this guy? Like, that's the only sort of conversation between people that isn't hostile to each other. It's if it's hostile to somebody else, like, just, oh, look at him. Yeah. Just, oh,
not that guy.
Do you see the way she's just sitting there? Who the hell does she think she is? Just a lot of that.
Bending her ankles like that.
Yeah. Take another sip of your drink. Ah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Salty party.
Oh, you're drinking water. Well, my new picture pick is a picture that's promoting something amazing, in my opinion. Shout Factory have confirmed that they've gotten two, which really means four, Transformers series locked in. They've got the rights to, the big one being Transformers Animated, and the surprise one being
Seasons
the Unicron
one and
Trilogy.
Two.
Yeah, season one and two. No word yet if the third season will... That would be a huge bummer. But Shout Factory, if you don't know, they put together some of the most loving DVD packages for these kind of shows that you can get. And the Transformers animated thing, that's the, obviously the huge, wonderful news to me, because they are the kind of guys who would assemble, like, they'd get together featurettes, they'd try to get together commentary tracks, and they'd get together a good, probably even, if they get enough support behind it, even a Blu-ray release, I bet you.
Maybe they would have all those shorts that Derek likes to show at conventions.
Yeah, they just you know, like, blackjack him in the back of the head at a convention, just take that disc he has and just, like, bootleg it onto their DVD set or something.
I think he'd probably give it to them if they asked.
No, but they'd still black... They'd just be like, no, this is how we do... We aren't Whisper Factory. We're Shout with an exclamation mark Factory.
Now, who put out those animated DVDs previously?
That was, I want to say... Cartoon Network directly? But I...
I have no idea where mine are.
Mine aren't here right now. But the other news that I think is kind of interesting... Mostly,
mine are somewhere in this room, but I could not tell you where they were at.
Mostly because we might get to see this stuff in high def, or at least, you know, the highest def we can, would be the Unicron trilogy. Because Armada... It was a hand-drawn series, and those kind of, especially if they use the Japanese masters, those could look pretty good. But Transformers Cybertron in particular, I would love to see in Blu-ray quality, because the renders and textures on those models were pretty cool. And to see them in, you know, a non-blocky fan-subbed encode or a non-bootleg from television encode would be kind of cool. Also, I would love to see, I'd love to see very self-aware featurettes and even commentaries on the Unicron trilogy. Like, with it being so far back in hindsight, and that a lot of the people who worked on it are no longer with the Transformers brand or even Hasbro in some cases, like, maybe that could just be, that could be Aaron Archer's big return. He'll just do some commentaries, like, in the style of the commentaries and featurettes for Batman Forever and Batman and Robin in that big Batman box set, of just like, all right, here's what went right and here's what went wrong. We're gonna lay it all bare, because it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, I probably won't. But
because that would have to then be approved by Hasbro, and they probably don't want anything negative about anything being said.
That's true. But there's that little 1% chance. Either way, anything about the process of those shows, especially when they like, even at BotCons, it was almost outright stated that those shows were kind of damaged in pre-production. I would love to see some stuff about, like, maybe, you know, like, how they eventually came together, stuff that was meant to happen and didn't, or vice versa. All this stuff coming out via Shout Factory is the thing that makes me pretty pumped, because they do a good job.
Yeah. Just watch out about holding on to hope for things that are never going to happen.
Well, I you know what?
I've learned a couple things about doing that, and it doesn't work out very well. So usually, don't hold on to threads that aren't there.
Usually I hold on to those threads, but I hold on to them in the saltiest way possible.
Salty Threads.
That's right. Salty Threads is my new social media website. You can make a Salty Threads account on saltythreads.ca.
Yeah, well, it's my clothing line.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the Canadian implementation.
It's my hip-hop streetwear line, Salty Threads.
I don't know what you're doing with the license down there in Merca, but...
We're playing
here.
Football with it.
Oh. Are you going to get Calvin the Johnson Megatron on your football team?
If I can, maybe.
Buy him from the Sea Lions or whatever that other team is called. The Detroit Sea Lions.
I'm going to start my own football league, a la the XFL.
Are you going to have drama between Jesse Ventura and one of your coaches?
I hope so. I think Ventura, like, left the country. Isn't he, like, chilling down in Mexico or something?
All I know is I caught...
He was like, oh, my conspiracies are out of hand. I gotta get out of this country.
I caught about 5 seconds with no sound of his conspiracy show via a commercial on the TV screen at TFCon, and he looked hilarious. Because he was, like, just totally dead serious, pointing at some guy, getting in his face and looking real like he's getting angry. And I knew he was probably talking about total nonsense.
Did he have, like, that weird, like, thin but long beard?
I don't recall his beard, but I want to say he had some kind of headband on.
Yeah. That dude's weird.
Also, Shout Factory didn't just get Transformers series. It's worth mentioning, they also got the exclusive rights to My Little Pony, The Princess Promenade, My Little Pony, A Very Minty Christmas, My Little Pony, Runaway Rainbow, My Little Pony Dancing in the Clouds, and My Little Pony Friends Are Never Far Away. All those My Little Ponies gone pretty much unnoticed by the Time Ghost and have no massive fandoms behind them, but now they will be available via Shout Factory for the hardcores.
Are those other versions of Pony? That's not Modern Pony?
No, those are, I think, pre-Modern Pony. Yeah, well, whatever. Modern Pony is now not Modern Pony, so those are pre-post-Modern Pony.
G1 My Little Pony?
I think at this point, if they're... I think these are probably more like G4 and G5. Like, Friendship is Magic is something like G8 or G9. So, there are a lot of Gs.
Yes. In the hood, there are a lot of Gs.
Hell, a lot of Gs in that pony trade.
In the pony hood, there's a lot of Gs.
Anyway, that's my new picture pick. It's a little bit of love to Shout Factory because, damn, I love the job they do. Seth, we've got a listener question from Corito Prime on YouTube. And his question is a simple one.
Why is my name not Dorito Prime? Because that would have been way more delicious.
I don't know.
Dorito Prime, think about it.
Back then you were more into the birds. Back when you made the first username you had.
Huh?
Buzzards with beaks and whatnot. I thought we were talking about, like, you going back in time and, like, telling yourself, no, man, Dorito Prime is where it's at.
No, I'm saying this guy's question is, why didn't I name myself Dorito Prime?
Oh, I thought you were just musing out loud about the, like...
No, his question is, why am I Corito Prime when I could have been Dorito Prime?
I thought you were just sitting there going, like, man, I could have been Dorito Prime.
I just want some Doritos.
I could go for some Doritos. I haven't had Doritos in a while.
What flavor?
I'd want... Well, are they doing any of those crazy, like, mystery flavors? Or like,
probably.
Because I always just get those. Keeps it interesting. Corito Prime's question is a simple one. It is, what is your opinion on the possibility of a Disney Infinity-based Transformers game? Also, what about a world editor on a Transformers game? That is all goodbye. So, Disney Infinity, for you guys who don't know...
That is all. Nothing else.
For you guys who don't know, Disney Infinity is the new... It's kind of like Skylanders game, but it's Disney, where you create these little sandbox worlds based on Disney properties. You can scan in Disney characters via figures of those characters done in a kind of cool art style. And then, at least in a sandbox mode, you can then just sort of start mushing stuff together. So you can have, like, Jack Sparrow running around the world of Toy Story fighting what's-his-name from The Incredibles.
Yeah, well, there's like, set pieces that are based on different properties, like cars.
Yeah.
And then when those have, like, missions, and I assume some sort of story thread to them, and in those cases, you can only use figures that are relevant to that. So you can't put Jack Sparrow in the Cars world. In the sandbox, then all bets are off, and you can mix and match the characters all you want, and then just run around and do nothing. I don't know. I don't know what you're doing that.
And it's been pretty amazing watching my various Twitter feeds kind of getting into it. In many cases based purely on the artistic aesthetic of Disney Infinity. Because I've seen some people who I saw talking major trash on Skylanders eyeing those Disney Infinity figures almost entirely just because they want to have some of those figures on their desk. So, Seth, what's your opinion on the possibility of that playstyle? Basically, you know, the scannable chip, scannable figure playstyle going into Transformers in some way.
Well, for the Skylanders folks, it was a giant cash cow. Like, there was a while where those things were selling out all over the place.
Yep.
And then it slowed down.
Just like Pongs.
Yeah, now Disney's hoping to, like, get some of that business.
Just so, like Pongs.
Yeah, I can see companies wanting to get in on that. It doesn't seem outside the realm of possibility that it would be something Hasbro was interested in. But, like, the lead time on making this stuff happen is so far. Like, I mean, there were two Skylander games out before Disney's first.
Yeah.
So, unless Hasbro had already been working on it, like, that thing's way long before it could ever come out.
Well, also, like, these existing properties doing this stuff, they're just static little figures that don't really pose or anything.
Right? Yeah, and I think, yeah. Well, I think some of the newer Skylander ones are have some articulation, but they're mostly just little statues. But like, I think we were talking about something else a couple months ago, and I brought up the possibility of having a chip in a Transformer toy and doing something Skylander-y with them.
I know it's come up before because, I mean, like, because Transformers also is a video game property now, like, yeah. That's been one of the things bounced around by those outside of our fandom as a possibility of picking up the, you know, the chip technology.
Yeah, but, you know, it, like, I think if Hasbro was going to jump in on something like this, if we look at other things they've done recently, like with Creo and what's that new building?
Constructobots.
Constructobots. They start everything with Transformers and then do other properties. So I could imagine a situation where they're like, we need to do something like this. Just do a Transformer one. And then maybe we'll do something else when nobody cares anymore.
Yeah, Transformers, then Star Wars, then G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Well, they probably won't be able to do Star Wars because Star Wars is Disney now.
Oh, damn, you're right.
Owned by Disney. Although then, I'm sure if Disney tried to put them into Infinity, then Hasbro would get up on their biz saying, like, no, we have the rights to do action figures and we're classifying those as action figures, like what we did to Lego when they tried to sell individual Star Wars Lego minifigs. So, yeah, Star Wars ones are probably never going to happen.
Yeah. Marvel Comics, though.
Marvel Comics and G.I. Joe. So
G.I. Joe will probably happen because they got to do something with G.I. Joe.
Yeah. So I think it would be interesting if they did something like with Disney where they had figures for multiple properties and didn't just focus on Transformers, and then you could have Transformers, G.I. Joe, My Little Pony. Let's say Marvel, even though Marvel's also Disney.
Man, rights are weird.
Yeah. So maybe rights would work out in a way to where those things would be in a Hasbro deal, or they would end up having to be a completely separate deal, or they would show up in Disney eventually, but that or everybody involved would go, this is too hard, forget it.
Yeah, I don't think it's impossible to imagine, maybe not for a game necessarily, maybe even just like a, or not a video game, but maybe just like a scanning system or a real simple game built into like a portal of some kind. Like, this chip technology, I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen in Transformers. I don't think it's an impossibility by any means, but until it happens with, like, just more posable action figures, I think that would happen before it would happen with transforming Transformers. And I think that the idea we're bouncing around of, like, a unified system for Hasbro properties would probably be more like Disney Infinity and Skylanders in terms of the actual toys before it moved into having, like, stuff full-on transforming with chips built into it. Like, it'd be cool, but I think it's far way away.
Yeah, like, I was just thinking, like, what if it was a deal where to transform your dude in the game, you transformed a toy that had RF and it let the game know which mode you were in. But then I started thinking, like, that's actually going to be kind of a bummer because you want to just transform and keep playing. You don't want to stop, do this other thing, and then continue the game.
Well,
so then it would have to be like a really simple deal.
Work it into the simpler, but you know, the simpler Transformer direction that it sounds like the movie toys might move into.
Well, I would have to think that to not really break up the flow of playing a game, it would have to be like, remember those funky gravity transforming ones that came out around the movie? So all you're doing is lifting it up or laying it down.
Yeah.
It'd have to be something at that level of ease.
I think that could be cool. Imagine if instead of like picking it up and putting it down, you were like picking it up and then you were like pulling it up into robot mode or pushing it down into alt mode. Like if that somehow was geared to work in a way.
Or if it not only had an RF to put out a signal, but it had something that detected signals. And in the game, you pressed a button to transform, and then motors transformed the toy.
Oh.
Sitting on the portal. And now everything costs like $100 each. There's so much technology involved.
I'm back in. I am back in. All right. The other question was a world editor in a Transformers game. I don't entirely know what that... I'm assuming that means, like, you can make your own maps or something. And, I mean, like, sure, that'd be cool. I don't know if world editor has, like, different connotations I'm not catching on to here.
Yeah, I'm guessing if it's just a map editor, then...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I just don't know if the license would end up at a studio that either has the time, resources, or desire to put something like that in.
I always got the feeling, even though, like, it was weird how, you know, when they shifted gears to do that somewhat questionable Deadpool game, I always felt like if High Moon actually got to just sit down and be the guys who make the Transformers game and spent, like, even longer on it and didn't have to do games in between, that kind of thing might have, you know, not necessarily a world editor, but something of that level of care would probably have shown up in one of their Transformers games. They seemed to enjoy it enough, but they also were a group who had to do stuff like tie-ins to the movies, tie-ins to Prime.
Yeah, or it would be like an effort, like the best they could do with their limitations.
Yeah.
That just wouldn't be there. Like, they would try to do something like Halo's Forge mode, but it just wouldn't be as good, and then it would just feel like, oh, this is a bad version of that.
Was their Deadpool game entirely a labor of love, or was that pushing something that was happening at the time? That's something I never got straight.
What do you mean?
Like,
pushing something that was happening?
Was there an outside of making a video game motivation for that Deadpool game? Like, was there some kind of, like, comic event going on, or...
I don't think so. I think it was just people like Deadpool. Let's try to get people who like Deadpool to buy a Deadpool game.
Okay.
I don't think... I mean, I'm sure somebody at High Moon is a fan of Deadpool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because so many people are, but I would be surprised if it was a case of, like, Johnny Moon, the head guy at High Moon, being like, I love Deadpool so much, I'm going after this license. I'm Johnny Moon, and I'm baked.
It'd be really cool if Matt Tiger actually was called Johnny Moon when he, like, puts on shades and, like, a suede suit.
That's his alter ego. His Heisenberg.
He just masquerades as the head of... Like, High Moon is actually his company, but he doesn't want anyone to know that, so Matt Tiger is this... He just hired himself into the company, and he created this persona of Johnny Moon to run the company.
No. He is like Heisenberg. He's a huge meth producer. High Moon Studios is his A1 car wash. That's how he's laundering his money.
Because they're high.
Yeah.
Oh. Man, I want a Heisenberg toy.
Even that awful little statue too expensive at Toys R Us?
I want a good Heisenberg toy.
I couldn't believe how much that thing was. I saw it and I was like, am I just going to cave in and buy this anyway? Nope. It was over $20.
Well, you know, sculpting costs money or something.
It was like, I think it was less than 15 on BBTS when it first went up for pre-order.
So number one, I can't believe they're selling like Breaking Bad toys at Toys R Us. But number two, I can't believe they're selling a Breaking Bad nerd Hummel, obviously not meant for kids because it doesn't do anything at Toys R Us.
There's that section of Toys R Us where it's like the more collector stuff, like where all the NECA stuff is and the McFarlane stuff is all in there.
Yeah.
And there's weird stuff in there sometimes.
Jazzwares video game toys are there too.
Well, because there's also the Breaking Bad bobbleheads, and they had those when I was at Toys R Us also. But now I can't remember what I was going to say. It's something. I was so excited about wanting to say something based on something you had said, I forgot what it was.
I can't believe is what I said about a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Breaking Bad toys. I hope that someday it becomes affordable to get a really good and poseable Heisenberg toy.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen.
It's for my purposes.
Oh, I remember, Pease. You said, I can't believe there's Breaking Bad toys. There's Kick-Ass toys?
Oh, yeah. Have you seen? Yeah. I like the packaging on them.
Yeah, KA2.
The MF-er?
Yeah, the MF-er from KA2. It's like, man, you guys.
Well, you know that they did San Diego Comic-Con exclusives of those where they didn't censor the packaging, and that was the exclusive?
Was it exactly the same figure otherwise?
Yep. Identical right, toys, just go. Different printing on the packaging.
Awesome.
And I was like, hey, you know what? Sure, do it. That's a great idea. Anyway, I hope that answered your question, Carito Prime. We're going to take a quick intermission break, and then we're going to come back to talk about some what we got this week. And it's going to be salty. I haven't been very salty so far. I didn't even make a crack at Jazzwares when I brought them up.
I think just by bringing them up, you...
made a crack at Jazzwares.
Implied a crack.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for them, Twitter wouldn't be all screwed up right now. So thanks, Jazzwares.
Yeah.
Okay, Seth, I'm going to be salty about something for a second.
Okay.
Heroes Salt of Cosplay.
Oh, no.
I never watched it, and I never will watch it.
What?
But having talked to people who are in costuming, such as Mirai Baby or Honore Decade, Dustin, I just want to say, Heroes of Cosplay, it's exactly what I thought it would be, but man, how depressing it is to hear about how much it's like exactly what I thought it was going to be. It's like an even worse thing than Toy Hunter was for toy collecting, only for costume people. It's this horrible show depicting costumers as insane egomaniacs who try to make costumes for a living. And that's like apparently the image that show portrays. And man... Gotta love the purveying power of television to do its best to set back the ability for average Joe public to take any hobby seriously.
Now, is Chloe Dykstra the host?
No idea. All I know
because
is that...
I think I heard that she is, in which case I'm disappointed, because Chloe Dykstra is Chris Hardwick's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Nerdist YouTube channel, they did a bunch of cosplay videos. Like, that was one of the shows on their channel, like, Just Cause. And Chloe kind of was the front person on that. And she does cosplay herself. And I thought that was good.
Mm-hmm.
So if she is affiliated with this show and you're saying it's bad, now, I remember seeing on Twitter some of Mirai Baby's early reactions were, and the impression that I got was she didn't hate it, but she was kind of bummed out that they were focusing on certain things. And then maybe as the weeks have passed, it's gotten worse. I don't know. I hadn't been following it that well.
There's a couple things about it. Now, one of them, granted, is a very, not even a personal thing, just an anecdote thing. My friend Dustin has had a number of very, very poor experience run-ins with one of the big reality characters on that show, Yaya Han. Apparently she's difficult to deal with. She's a career cosplayer. The other thing that's been going on with that show is apparently, and this is the funny thing, because this is turning into a legitimate problem for Sci-Fi as a channel, is apparently a lot of the costumers on Heroes of Cosplay presented a whole bunch of photos that they said they owned. And it turns out that because, you know, photographers are actually doing a business, a number of photographers have seen their work showing up on that TV show and they had no idea about it. And that work was, like, those photographs were made under a certain agreement that very specifically didn't involve using it to pump yourself up on a TV show. And so now a bunch of photographers are quite legitimately starting legal action against Sci-Fi because Sci-Fi just assumed, oh, all these costume people are crazy and they have all these stupid photos. And
those people, if they gave Sci-Fi the pictures, now is Sci-Fi claiming they own it, or did the people say, or did Sci-Fi say, hey, do you have any pictures we could use? And they went, yeah, these are pictures that I have. And they didn't understand what the terms were.
It's very mixed, and there have been a number of... There apparently are a number of photographers who were contacted who willingly gave over their work for free, but the ones who are starting a real fuss, as far as I understand it, are photographers who were not contacted whatsoever.
Because if it was the costumer who was asked for some pictures and said, well, I had these pictures taken, and this is something I do as a hobby, or maybe it could be a career one day, but I'm not savvy in business, so I just assume that once I had these pictures taken that I could do with them whatever I want. So here you go, Sci-Fi. Then that's a mistake. And I would hope everyone could come to an agreement to rectify it. Nobody needs to sue each other. If Sci-Fi was just like, we're going to take whatever we want, then okay, then suing people that way. But if it was an honest mistake because someone just didn't know better, then I think it's a bummer if people have to start taking legal action over it.
And also, a lot of this is like, this is a very anecdotal anecdote I'm sharing. As I said, I haven't watched the show. I've just been watching from the sidelines because I've gotten to know a bunch of costumers. And, many costumers are also at the point where they're kind of like, they're watching it out of an obligation. And some have even hit the point of, I'm just not watching this anymore, which is where I hope everyone would have been by now. Because it's a reality TV show. They found a new niche to stick the virus of reality TV into. And, you know, I saw these things. It was exactly like me and Toy Hunter, where people were like, oh, I thought this could have been maybe something positive, you know, to get across the good side of things. Exactly like how I felt, you know, Toy Hunter could have gone. And I know that that was me being a naive person who was ignoring the history of reality TV. And,
well,
it sucks.
I'm just going to keep assuming that Chloe Dykstra is involved, in which case I'm disappointed that it's not better. I would have hoped that she would have stood up and made sure that everything was presented correctly, because it seems like something she cares about, and it's a community she's part of. So, like, listening to the Tell 'Em Steve Dave podcast, those guys are on the AMC reality show Comic Book Men. And on their podcast, they don't care about other people's feelings. And they have talked in detail about what making that show was like. And they've talked about clashes they've had with various producers over how that show is made. Now, they acknowledge, like, some of the stuff they wouldn't do normally, or wouldn't have done normally, and they agree to do it to create content for the show. And they don't sit at a table and wait for people to come in all day to try to sell them stuff. They're trying to run a comic book store and sell other people stuff. So those are conceits they made for television, but like what they say and how they react to things, they've described multiple situations where they put their foot down and say, no, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't do that. He wouldn't make this happen. We wouldn't go to do this thing. Like, we will go to do this thing because we think, oh, that'll be fun, but we would never do this, so we're not going to do that. And there's been phone calls with Kevin Smith getting involved and AMC bigwigs. And so when these reality shows get made, a lot of it is going to be up to the people who are featured, like how willing they are to say no and how willing they are to just do whatever they're told.
I also expect someone involved in a show like this who doesn't have a lot of experience could be victimized by the fact that they could say anything they want to say during recording, but reality TV is created by the edit.
Yeah.
And you can, and that is how reality TV is created, is that no matter what they film, like they will set up circumstances, don't get me wrong, but no matter what they film, they will edit it in a way that completely misrepresents what happened.
Yeah, well, you look at the Real World, any episode of the Real World, look at the credits, there's like 20 writers.
Yeah.
Like people with a credit of writer. And there's all kinds of stories from that show where things are cut to make it look like they happened like one event immediately after the other, when they really took place like weeks apart in a different order because they're cutting stories together.
Yeah.
So reality TV is not that real. It's just unscripted. But like a lot of those shows, like I've heard stories about how a lot of those shows work, is the producer comes in, tells the people, okay, you two are going to be here behind the counter. You come in and you say that everyone has to go outside because there's something crazy. And then everybody goes outside. And then when we get outside, we'll tell you what happens next. And that's not real at all.
And I hope that most of you guys listening have found this out by now. Yeah. That reality TV is a crock. But you know, just in case.
Well, it's unfortunate that cosplayers aren't being shown in a more accurate way.
Yeah,
if that's the case. I haven't seen the show. I don't know.
I'm not a cosplayer,
so I still wouldn't know.
As I understand it, if you aren't one of the superstar cosplayers, they are generally representing average Joe cosplayer as a raving lunatic.
Some of them are.
Yeah, some of them are. But, hey man, what's the easiest way to describe a cosplayer from average Joe public? Oh, I bet they're the crazy people who dress up like cats, what have, you know, anal flaps so they can get it on. And, you know, it's like with Toy Hunter. What's the best way to play up toy collecting to average Joe public? They're all in it for the money. Old toys are gold. You know? Like, it's skeevy. It's disgusting. Anyway, I'm tired of talking about reality TV. Let's talk about, you know, nice things like having a hobby. Let's talk about
House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. Scripted television.
Yeah, you know, real stories that are upfront about being fiction. Seth, fiction or not, what did you get this week?
On topic?
Yeah. All right.
And that's it.
Well, I got something that's really worth talking about. And this is also a shout out. And Seth, this relates to something you've talked about before.
Oh no.
Flashback. So on my birthday, I got a Twitter message from Ian Reed on Twitter, Hard Return, who actually turns out lives super close to where I am now. He basically was like, "Yo, I got a figure for you if you want. So if you're in this area, come on by." I was like, "For sure." And I was like, "I'm in that area a lot." So I met up with him, nice guy.
How you said that? Like, I'm in that area a lot. Like, oh, whew. I mean, that's where all the hookers are. So of course I'm in that area.
Yeah, I mean, a businessman's got to do his business. So he, you know, as a birthday gift, and I really appreciate it, he gave me a figure, and he also prefaced it completely honestly with, "This isn't a very good toy." And I was like, "I totally dig it, but I thank you
is
anyway."
Is it Meth Kitty?
It is iGears Veer.
Oh, okay.
And it's not a very good figure. It's not a terrible toy. And I'm trying to not let the gift nature of this, you know, color that. And if I haven't made it clear, I super appreciate Ian Reed's kind of birthday gift. It was basically the weekends are the only things that have been good this month, and my birthday weekend was among those. And it was thanks to folks like Ian Reed and my brother and everyone. Like, it really helped out. So anyway, iGears Veer. He actually modified it. He told me that he'd gone in and opened up the torso and actually did a bit of carving to the neck joint so the head would actually swivel without a whole lot of hassle. And it does. The head swivels super easy now. I can't imagine what this was like before.
I'm trying to figure out how you get the chest open part.
I don't know exactly how. I think he might have pried the whole thing open. But yeah, he fixed the neck so it can actually turn. This is a kind of, like, the vehicle mode on this toy is basically the description of this toy, which is it looks like it's way the hell too big for what it looks like. and man, in hand, I thought, you know, Hench, Braun, I thought he looked like a blown up toy. This is a blown up toy. Like, this, like, you know, in good ways and bad, because it's a hefty. It's a big toy. It's way bigger than it looks in photos. But it also looks like it's bigger than it's supposed to be.
But do you see what I was trying to describe about the two elbows?
Oh man, the arms are all kind of screwed up. Like, yeah, there's a swivel elbow. There's a ball-jointed elbow that doesn't really bend all that well. The shoulder lines are insane on this toy. Like, trying to piece together the actual internal skeleton. Because, yeah. You know, it's not really there, but usually when it's not there, you can kind of at least piece together where it would be. On this
it's like a Rob Liefeld drawing.
This man, like, his shoulders are both too low and too high at the same time, and I don't know how to describe that any differently.
Rob Liefeldian.
The arms, something went strange with the arms on this, which is a bummer. Although I found a few poses I still really like on this guy. I actually got him into a pose I didn't think he could do, where I got him holding his Tommy gun with two hands.
Really? How did you do that?
I really carefully and in a way that's extremely, like, rigid and only looks good from, like, one angle. And it involves him turning his head to look where he's shooting, and that means that most of his vision is obscured by all the stuff around his head. Which is kind of funny.
Is it like he's holding it by the ammo drum?
No, he's holding it properly in one hand, and then I have the other hand, like, cupping underneath the barrel. Yeah. It's a fun little toy, but it is definitely flawed, and it really cements to me that this whole thing of making them this big, it just feels like that was the wrong direction to go. The jetpack is super cute. I really like the head sculpt, and I like the battle mask head. It's, you know, for something that has no basis and is kind of fully original, it's cool. Like, I don't dislike the battle mask. The head's like the head and the chest are actually two of the strongest parts in this toy, because the chest looks really cool. Like, it's got all these little intricate paint apps, and they're all actually sculpted in. He's got a waist joint. He's got, like, a very solid stance. Like, if he had better arms, he'd be a much better toy.
Well, I appreciated the chest part because it does make it more like the original toy.
Yeah.
But in general, I think the mold works better for Gears, and then it still has all the same problems.
And I'm also leaving out the elephant in the room, which is that the colors are all hinky-dink crazy.
Yeah.
The colors look like they were once correct, and then something happened that knocked everything out of place.
Well, it's similar to what I think about the Outback. I forget what the
correct name is. Bushwhacker or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's like they set the colors, the color values, and then somewhere along the line they all got reduced by 10%. Like, everything's a couple shades too light. Like, the dark parts on the Outback are the color that the light part should have been, and the dark part should have been a step darker. And so, like, Veer, where he should be red, he's like salmon. It's like faded. It's like everything faded.
And it's so weird to look at in person because it looks like a Photoshop effect, but in person.
Well, or it's like they designed it on the computer with the proper color settings, printed it out on a crappy printer so the colors were all faded and off, and that's what they made.
Yeah. But, like, the one thing about this, salty podcast or not, like, the thing I didn't want to say about this, I'm going to have to say, which is, from certain angles, particularly ones that entirely hide how his arms connect to his torso, it looks like actually kind of a cool figure, to the point where, if TFCon were to continue on this train of reusing the mini warriors for their exclusives, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing this figure used to make something like Smallfoot or something like that. Like, I don't hate the toy as the toy. It's a flawed toy and certainly not the best I've ever seen. The arms are just a massive weakness, but I wouldn't be upset to get an exclusive color of this, and I was really hoping I'd come out of this saying no, so I could start like yelling at all of them to you know, can it with the eye gear thing. But this figure has a bit of merit. Although messing with this figure, part of what works about him is he's also so chunky. And then having seen that Dune Raker is like his size, but way less detailed and lankier, I feel way less enthused about the idea of Dune Raker.
Yeah, I'm not into Dune Raker very much. I just like that he came with a flower to stick in his gun barrel. But, like, a point that I made before was I think the comic book Swerve is probably better known and more liked at this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In which case, if you want a Swerve toy, I would wait for either the official or the third-party comic book-style one that are in the works.
Yeah, this...
And
this,
skip this one.
As a big fan of the comic book that Swerve comes from, this absolutely is not that Swerve in, like, multiple respects. He is completely not that Swerve.
If you want a G1-style Swerve, this is really your only option. But if you just want Swerve... Like, I don't read the comics. I like that, like, both the Hasbro one and the third-party one that are in the works, I think both of them look cool. Like, I think that's a cool design. And I will probably get one or both of those just because I like it. So I would get, if you were only going to get one Swerve, I would say pass on this one, get one of the other ones.
Yeah. And let me say it again. I've actually been enjoying having this figure on my desk for all his flaws. He's actually kind of a fun toy to flip from mode to mode. And from certain angles, he looks really cool. You just got to hide those shoulders. So I want you to thank you again to Ian Reed on Twitter. Hard return. Gentleman who hopefully I'll be... we'll be heading out and hitting up some of the local scene here and there. Rolling back to our previous discussion, that probably came out sounding really funny. But, thank you, Ian Reed. The other stuff that I have yet to talk about from like 2 weeks ago, I still haven't opened up, so I don't got nothing to say about it yet. So I'm not gonna blow those opportunities. Which brings us to the end of our on topic, what we got this week. So, Seth Buzzard, did you get anything that was not a Transformer toy?
Yes.
Oh, no!
Over the last couple weeks, I've purchased 3 professional wrestler figures.
Are you joining a new fandom?
No.
Oh.
I'm really only buying them because they come with roughly 1/12 scale clothing. Like, the WWE figures are slightly bigger than that scale. Like, I think they're 7-inch figures, not 6-inch figures. They're slightly bigger. Which actually comes in handy, because the ones that come with, like, tailored clothing pieces makes it easier to fit them on other figures if they're a little baggier.
That's what I figured.
So, I was at the Toys R Us and not finding anything good to look for. I've only seen Star Wars Black Label figures once in the wild. when I found the Darth Maul and the X-Wing Luke at Target the day after they opened in Petaluma. I've never seen any anywhere else.
Man, I hope you can find some, because the that Stormtrooper is well, delightful.
I pre-ordered the Stormtrooper and R2-D2 from Big Bad. Because okay. I knew I wanted those two, and I knew this way I could guarantee it. I was hoping I would find them before, and then buy them locally, and then cancel the pre-order, because then I would save a little bit of money.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out. But anyway, so I'm at the Toys R Us, and I didn't get that Breaking Bad figure. And I'm not seeing anything else that I like. Like, I look in the Transformers, and I look in what passes for G.I. Joe section, and I look at the Star Wars stuff, and I don't know, Black though. And then I'm like, let's find the ever-moving clearance shelf, because it seems like every time I go to this Toys R Us, the clearance section is somewhere else. Because who knows what you're going to find. So I go, and they had a bunch of Toys R Us exclusive, the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff 2-pack. And I was looking, I'm like, hey, the Iron Sheik comes with a white robe. And Nikolai Volkoff comes with a red jacket with a hammer and sickle on one side and a USSR on the other side. And they're on clearance. I'm going to buy these. And I'm going to put the Soviet jacket on my Captain America. And just because it's going to be so dumb. And then I had mentioned last time that I had ordered a Rowdy Roddy Piper. So that came the other day. And I had some fun with that. I put the kilt on the Mayfex Batman. Mm-hmm. And I did some dumb Vine videos. So you probably missed those.
Yeah, my Twitter feed is fast moving.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not coming down on you for not having seen them.
Like, I'm the worst person.
This last week, I've been kind of awful on keeping up with Twitter myself. Like, I catch a handful of tweets during the day. Otherwise, I'm usually just, did anybody at me? Because I think it would be rude to completely ignore all of my apps.
I could just go to, like, twitter.com/SethBuzzard in order to both follow and read your tweets and thoughts on your Twitter feed.
My Twitter feed?
Yeah. Because on the photos and videos, it has there's a bunch that have a play button on them.
Yeah.
So I see one with bagpipes.
There's a couple that I use the bagpipes on.
Oh, dear.
But one of them, you don't see the bagpipes right away.
Which is really weird. On my desktop computer, Vine never plays. I just get a still image.
With both my desktop and my laptop, if I open up a Vine, it always defaults to the sound being off. And then I have to click the sound on. When I go to Vine through my iPhone, what does it do? It does something else weird.
Well, that's the thing, is like on my desktop, it has the sound muted, but the picture also is just sitting on frame one and doesn't move.
Oh, when I go to a Vine video on my iPhone, there's a play button. So it doesn't automatically start playing. I have to press a button for it to play. But I don't have to press another button to make the sound happen.
Man, these are the problems to talk about. Screw Miley Cyrus. Why doesn't my Vine work right?
Anyway. Literally? Is that literally?
Huh?
Screw Miley Cyrus.
I'm no comment. Every time I look at those wrestling figures, because Mattel's doing them.
Yeah.
I always look at those, and I look at how well done, you know, for a tailored outfit on a figure on a store shelf. I look at that, and I'm just sitting there going, like, this is just the further ongoing mystery of how Mattel is so good at some things, but so bad at some things at the same time.
Yeah.
And, man. Well,
yeah, like, I mean, the articulation's okay on all of them. It's not great, like, but, you know, it's a mainline on a shelf thing. So you can't compare it to like figure arts or something.
I'm not.
So for what it is, the articulation on these things I feel are adequate.
Yeah, the thing that blows my mind is their wrestling figures, I think, are really well done, but just, like, the really good ones, it seems like they just sort of pop up on the shelves to, like, almost no fanfare that I'm aware of. And some of the technology on those, I'd love to see on some of their other lines, like their DC and their He-Man stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, the clothes!
Well, I think the face sculpts tend to be hit or miss with the wrestling figures. Like the Iron Sheik one is amazing.
Yeah.
The Rowdy Roddy Piper one looks nothing like Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Don't they scan those, or am I think was that only Jack specific? I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Eh.
Or maybe Piper was having a bad day when they scanned him. Or if they're scanning him now and he's a lot older than what the figure was supposed to represent, then they might have had to tweak it or something. I don't know, but it didn't look that great.
That's why of guys in masks are always the best.
Well, the subline that Piper that I got was in is like memorable entrances or great entrances or whatever it's called. And those figures all came with a display stand where you press a button and it plays a couple seconds of their entry music.
Yeah.
So in these vines, the music you hear, the bagpipe music, is me holding up that bass to my iPhone as I'm making the vine. Which is why it sounds awful. Because it's a crappy audio sample coming through a crappier speaker and then being picked up by a crappy microphone.
No, I mean that stuff all, like, those entrance figures, some of them are fantastic. Like, there's an Ultimate Warrior one, I think, where they did, like, all the tassels in actual cloth. I'm like, man. That's cool. It's also the Ultimate Warrior. That's cool.
Yeah, and I had some really specific... I had, like, one idea to do a joke involving a Macho Man figure, and now Macho Man figures are all really expensive, and I could have gotten that one with the white jacket and cowboy hat on clearance, like, so cheap at one point. And I was like, it's not worth spending the money now to make a joke once on Twitter that probably a lot of people aren't even going to get.
That kind of spending is best left to the Image Comics sub-forum.
What's... Huh?
Like buying a figure for a photo gag. We haven't brought up the Image Comics or whatever sub-forum in a while.
I thought you meant Image Comics, the company. I'm like, what?
I meant the Funnies forum.
Oh. Somebody asked me recently if I was ever going to bring back them funny robots, and... probably not.
Transformers Funnies, 6 viewing. Home to them funny robots.
Because you know what's way faster than making a photo comic? You know what takes way less time?
Making a Vine?
Vine video takes way less time.
You should bring back them funny robots as Vine video, but have it be nothing but Mafex Batman.
Alright. Done. All right. I have like 11 or 12 of them already.
Them funny robots is back.
Yeah, but, like, even with, I mean, it's, I don't know, like, I feel like I made all the Transformer jokes as far as toys, doing them funny robots, and I feel I repeated a lot of those jokes, so I just don't know what to do that isn't just repeating jokes that I think are old and worn out.
Hmm.
Other people might not think they're old and worn out, or it might be new to them because they weren't around as long or whatever, but it would just feel stale and flat.
I was going to follow up and making some remark
I'm already running out of things to do with Batman.
I was going to make some remark about the Funny World 2005, but I got distracted because right below that sub-forum... friggin' Carl Hartman just showed up to go like, yo, there's a package change on Sharkticon Megatron, FYI, in the resources submissions. So that's kind of cool. TFW yeah. Resources database submissions. Top post, Carl Hartman.
Or Cartman for short.
Staying on top.
PSG's so tall.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you've been enjoying these Batman vines I've been making, I don't know how many more are left in me.
Well, next you got to introduce, what was the thing? Chips.
No.
Was that? Yeah.
That was somebody, that was somebody else's thing.
I made a reference. All right. That's cool. You're getting me tempted by those wrestling figures now. Because I said I have like two of them and they were friggin' cool. And
you Skyped out. I have no idea what you just said.
Oh.
I just heard you have... And I have two of them and that's cool.
That's right. You have two. I have two. It's... I was talking about wrestling figures.
Oh, all right. Yeah, and look, I'm not going to start collecting wrestling figures, but if I see one that has a piece of clothing, I go, I can make a joke about this once, and maybe three people will laugh. I may get it. But also, it's probably going to have to be like a character from the 80s that I remember and care about.
Well, I wish I could follow up on your what you got, unless you got anything else.
No.
I don't really got any updates on my end on the off-topic side of things other than... Well, I could talk about the GLaDOS I got a little while ago. Because okay. I was saving this for you because, like, I forgot how into GLaDOS you were after the Colgrim thing, but... They had a drop that had a kind of cool aesthetic to it, and it was also the debut of a figure they'd been trying to make for a couple of years called Noboto. And so basically, there was something kind of neat and retro about this drop, because it was very much based on Matt Doughty's wife's art, because she's the one who created Noboto and the Gobon as basically a pair. And the Gobon has been a figure for years, and Noboto has not been a figure for years, but now he is. And there's something really cool about the palette, because it's this really neat palette that is completely and utterly children's book, and that's the only way I can think to describe it. Seth, I sent you a picture to a few shots of a couple of these. I'm saying for the viewers'
sake,
it's this kind of like...
Pastel Easter kind of thing.
Yeah, like pea soup green and an Easter yellow and a kind of like... milk chocolate brown and white. And, man, it's pleasant. Also, Noboto's a cool figure. His little neck ring and his belt are both separate pieces that can be removed.
I don't think I would call that pea soup green.
What would you call it?
Like, a pastel-y mint. Like, yeah, when I think that. Pea soup, I think of a richer green. This is like a lighter... like pastel style, like mint.
Yeah, Easter Christmas green.
It looks like it would be delicious.
Yeah, oh, these toys are delicious, let me tell you. They got all that mold release on them, and it's like, oh. Anyway, I never talked about getting those, so I just realized I'd had them on my list here for a while. They're cool toys. Noboto, I haven't done much building, but I got into GLaDOS, you know, a couple years ago, and Noboto was always this kind of phantom... potential figure floating around for much longer than I'd, you know, been aware of him, and so his release was kind of an event for the long time people, and it was just an event for me because I knew he was the buddy of the Gobon. This also, the Gobon in yellow with white limbs is the first time the Gobon has been released in his quote-unquote standard colors. Every Gobon up till now for years have all been non-standard, and we finally got the standard Gobon. So high that fives.
Sounds wrong.
Art toy talk. Let me tell you about my... I forgot what they're called.
Well, how now. Standard is the standard colors if it had never been done before? That doesn't seem very standard.
What it means is that the original Alpha Gobon had never made an appearance till now. We were dealing with knockoffs and clones. All speaking right. of which, Noboto has an alternate head that is literally the Noboto clone head to explain how there are multiple Noboto figures. It's got more lines on it. But yeah, I haven't gotten any video games. Played the crap out of Saints Row 4, I mentioned that last week.
Yeah, I've I've started it. I haven't gotten very far.
Yeah, I'm
hoping over the next couple weeks to get more time.
I've been hearing rumblings about the DLC, and I'm all in on that. As I'd said before, Saints Row, the people at Volition get me, whether or not they mean to, they get me. And so their content tends to be up my alley.
Okay. I wasn't that impressed with the use of the Aerosmith song. When it happened, I went, eh. I get it. The seventh voice, I thought, okay, that's kind of funny. If you know about video game voice acting. If you don't pay attention to that stuff, you're not going to get it. Which, I thought, made the joke even better still. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't go for a broad everybody get it joke like a grunting zombie. They went for a joke that only people who pay attention to video game voice actors are going to get. And then I thought, Keith David being the vice president. So now Keith David is doing the voice of himself as the vice president. When he was the voice of the Saints leader in the first game. And then he's popped up in other Saints games. I thought that diminished, because Keith David's another one of these guys that does voices in lots of games.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's, again, like, it's not as niche of a joke as Nolan North being a named voice, or being a voice named for himself, because Keith David's more well known in and out of voice acting. But to do that joke for two guys, I think diminishes both jokes.
I think the joke worked. So, and I'm not going to go into spoilers, but I think the Nolan North joke worked better on paper than in implementation. And I think the Keith David joke, it doesn't sound like much up front, but overall plays better. And it plays better, not entirely due to, but a part of why it plays better is the way that the game addresses the character of Julius Little, who Keith David voiced in Saints Row 1 and 2. And that's all I'm going to say. Because yeah. I can't
I
say
haven't
much
gotten
else.
Yeah. That far.
But they address it in several ways, but in particular, there was something that I did, and it pretty much answered my question. I was like, all right, that is precisely what I would have done in that situation. Because the Keith David in the game is more so the Keith David that we all know as, you know, the Keith David from Mass Effect and the Keith David from Call of Duty. Like, that voice of that guy, what is in charge of you and you can look up to kind of voice.
Military leader guy.
Yeah, and I feel like that joke worked a whole lot better than the Nolan North joke. Admittedly, I have biases about some Saints Row voices. Like, you know, Laura Bailey is the boss as far as I'm concerned. But I heard a Nolan
is
North...
Is that lady number one?
Yes.
Or female voice? Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. There was a particular line of hers, a delivery in a mission I really liked. And I went to look up the mission and someone was playing it with Nolan North. And his delivery... just was not very good, and Laura Bailey's delivery was both good and kind of really funny, and she almost performed a different line, and Laura Bailey has gone, like, if her, like, she's not matching up the subtitles more than once, which I don't know if that means I'm just getting, like, someone else's subtitles, or she went way off paper because she gets what she's doing, I don't know, but I feel like that also might have given me a different experience, just because, I mean, Seth, you know her performance, like the character she plays as the boss, and yeah. There's a certain kind of funny that goes with, and everything I've heard of Nolan North sounds like it's trying a different funny and one that I'm not as into. I don't know. Someone said it sounded like it was just Deadpool the game happening over Saints Row, and I couldn't disagree with that, but I don't know if that's being really mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to play this game more than once. I just haven't been playing video games as much as I used to.
Yeah.
And it's starting to stress me out because I have all these current generation games I never played. and the new generation is right around the corner. And it's starting to, I'm starting to feel pressured by video games.
No, me too.
Which makes me not want to play more. So I'm not going to have the time to do it, two playthroughs like I have with past Saints Row games.
And
Grand Theft Auto 5 is in a couple of weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
I think it's like September 17th or something.
I've got some PS3 things like staring me in the face, like Eco and Shadow of the Colossus HD and Last of Us.
I started Last of Us. I haven't finished that.
They're all just glaring at me, going like, play me. And with Last of Us, it's been long enough now where I'm like, I'm going to wait till it's $40. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the price of that is probably going to start dropping. All that stuff's probably going to start dropping faster and farther as soon as PS4 and Xbox One are out.
The big new toys.
Yeah, but... Yeah, I'm going to try to work on.
Can you believe what Nintendo did? Did you see the 2DS? Oh, I can't believe what Nintendo did.
I paid no attention to that.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that's about. I heard somebody say something about a 2DS, and I was like,
I thought the name was super duper super funny, and then I kind of lost interest in the topic.
Yeah. But ever since in the Saint Row games, your character talked. Mm-hmm. That's been the voice
of Same my here. Boss.
And I didn't play much of Saints Row 1. I thought it was awful. But I couldn't stand it.
You've played Saints Row 1?
I played about 2 hours of it. This is terrible.
That's actually putting you in a pretty good position for some stuff.
Yeah, it's so bad. Like,
yeah,
like the character doesn't talk in Saints Row 1. He's a silent protagonist. Player. Yeah, and Keith David calls you player, which I thought was clever. But your character never talks, and your customization options are very limited, and your only gender choice is male. Which I think makes Saints Row 2 on hilarious if you choose to be female, because in Saints Row 2, it starts with a flashback of your character getting blown up on a boat. And then your character wakes up in prison after having undergone reconstructive surgery. And that's the conceit for redesigning your character. So now if you switch gender to female, your character blew up on a boat, and then the reconstructive surgery was also gender reassignment. So if you play the boss as a female, you're really a transgendered character.
It's very ahead of its time.
Yeah.
So I
have always been a transgender character with the same voice since Saints Row 1, which was awful and I didn't finish.
I need you to bring up on this show or elsewhere once you've finished the story mode of that.
I probably will.
Okay. Because I need to ask you about a few things.
Is it about Saints Row 1?
Potentially.
Because I did not play very much of that a long time ago.
Nonetheless, I need to ask you a few questions about your thoughts on things.
The best way I could think of to describe Saints Row 1 is imagine, like, San Andreas era Grand Theft Auto, but awful.
Well, I mean, you heard the opening narration to Saints Row 4, right? Where they kind of try to describe how this all runs together.
I mean, I had to if it was the opening narration, but now I'm not remembering specifically.
Okay, this is like the opening 30 seconds of the game, so this cannot possibly be a spoiler, but that narration kind of describes this thing of, like, the Saints, like, coming to a crossroad. Like, it kind of describes how things went from Saints Row 1 to Saints Row 2. where it's like the Saints kind of ran into a crossroads of, you know, are they going to do this or going to do that? And they decided to just stop caring about stuff. And so they kind of... The opening narration of Saints Row 4 starts off this weird thing of them kind of... And I think it works, but I have a certain taste of them justifying how these are all the same line of games.
Well, Saints Row 1, like, they were a gang, but they were like a gang of do-gooders almost.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of, like, Keith David's character, like, kind of testifying about, like, we're a gang, but we're going to make the streets safer sort of a thing. And they were like... a really violent version of the Guardian Angels, I guess. But then, yeah, like in Saints Row 2, you're out to take over the whole city and you're wiping out all the other gangs. Not because you're going to make the world safer and better, but because we're a gang.
And that is... there's a character progression underneath that, which is why I think the boss is a cooler character than Shepard. But I'm going to leave that alone. Aside from saying that and starting up a huge fight.
Well, and that character, at the very beginning of Saints Row 1, you're just a dude walking down the street.
So that's how Saints Row 1 opens?
Yeah. And then, like, this gang shootout happens, and your character gets wounded, and you're taken in by the Saints, and patched up, and that's how you join the Saints.
Man, oh, there's parts of Saints Row 4 now I want to go back and... I really like Saints Row 4. I also think that a lot of the hype for Saints Row 4 is getting a little obnoxious. Which is a bummer.
You Skyped again.
Oh.
You said all the hype for Saints Row is a bummer.
It's a bummer because it's getting a little obnoxious. I think there are a lot of people starting to play up Saints Row 4 in a kind of... this is how everyone got put off of Gurren Lagann and all these other things kind of way. I think people need to calm down a little bit. Saints Row 4 moved a million units already. Plus, they don't need your help anymore. I understand you like the game, but you kind of have to let stuff happen too. You know, don't hammer into, don't send people YouTube clips telling them to play, because if you're sending them a YouTube clip, you're taking away the whole reason why they need to play the game in the first place.
And I'm playing on the Xbox, which is apparently the worst possible option.
I heard it's way better if you install it, which I'm assuming you do with your games.
I always installed everything.
Yeah, I read somewhere that installing it greatly enhances the...
Oh, I'm so mad at people about the Xbox One.
What?
The people
why?
Complaining about the whole thing where it has to be connected and check in.
Yeah?
Now that that's taken out... that also took out a feature that I was really looking forward to in the Xbox One. Which is, you have your game on the disc, you install it to the system, you take the disc out, and you don't need the disc anymore.
Oh!
But now that it's not going to check in, and you don't have to be connected, you have to have the disc in the machine for the game to start.
I'm sure that feature will resurface.
Because one of the things that was checking online was to make sure you had the game.
I'm sure that feature will resurface in some way.
I hope so, because I was really looking forward to just installing my games, putting them back in the box, and putting the box on a shelf, or I don't have a shelf, I just stack them up in this ever-growing tower. And then I don't need the disc anymore.
The crazy malleability of the Xbox One's feature set and everything makes me think that a lot of things that were quote-unquote cut will return as an opt-in feature. That's my hypothesis.
Well, because I would like to have a game on the disc, so because, like, it sounds like more and more it's going to be the case where on the same day it's going to come out on disc and for download. So you avoid the whole disc problem if you download it. But if for whatever reason that stuff's not available anymore for download, because now the next Xbox has come out, or Microsoft's completely shut its doors because it can't function without Steve Ballmer. Apparently Steve Ballmer retiring in the future will prove to have been the worst thing to ever happen to Microsoft.
Their press conferences will be way less entertaining.
Yeah, so if for whatever reason you can't re-download that stuff if you need to in the future, it's good to have the disc. But yeah. I might end up downloading more stuff because I don't want to have to put the disc in.
Well, at the end of the day, we're all doomed anyway, because
we now live in a world where Steve Ballmer is not part of Microsoft.
Yeah.
I hope that's not a world I want to be in.
Is he, like, just retire? Is he just going to retire, or is he going to go somewhere else? Because if he just retires, I want him to start up a YouTube channel.
As far as I know, he will not be involved in Microsoft anymore.
I want him to start a vlog series called Ballman with Ballmer.
And it's just him driving around.
That's right. Just yelling and going crazy.
He just hits the road. It starts with him walking out of the front door of the Microsoft campus, getting into his car, and just driving. And he just spends the rest of his days driving around the United States.
Yeah, just drinking bottled water, just going like, "Welcome to another edition of Ballin' with Ballmer."
And then every now and then he finds himself close to one of the borders, and he thinks about crossing, but then remembers that he forgot his passport.
Yeah, and he just turns left.
And he can't go back, because it's been 3 months.
Yeah.
He's way too far away.
He just turns left and keeps going.
Or right, if he... I said either of the borders.
There's always left.
Oh.
Always turns left. When he hits a border... Or he hits the edge of a landmass and he hits the water.
I was imagining him parallel with the border.
Oh, okay.
So if he was parallel with the Canadian border and turned left, then he's in trouble.
I imagine just any border he sees, he's just going to drive straight on into it and then turn left.
Or he'd be like, "Oh, I forgot my passport."
I was watching some YouTube compilation videos of Steve Ballmer being crazy. That was kind of a fun hour. It was really loud, too. But it was fun.
Have you seen the made-for-TV movie Pirates of Silicon Valley where John DiMaggio plays Steve Ballmer?
No, but that's perfect!
Yeah, he does a really good job. And this was late 90s. So this is before anybody knew who John DiMaggio was. Like, he wasn't a famous amongst the voice actors guy yet.
Yeah. I'd heard of the movie, and I think we watched a clip of it in a computer science class once, but I never sat down to see the whole thing.
I saw it when it was on TV originally, and I got it on Netflix. It wasn't on Instant. I had to get the disc. But I always remembered thinking, that was really good. I want to see that again someday. Noel Wiley does a fantastic job playing Steve Jobs. He looked like Steve Jobs. He sounded like Steve. He did a great job. And, I forget his name. Played Steve Wozniak. He was John Adams in the HBO series. Ribisi? Is that his last name?
It's outside of my wheelhouse, I think.
Anyway, he plays Wozniak. But, so that Ashton Kutcher, Steve Jobs movie that just came out?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen shots of the guy playing Wozniak in that?
I only saw a few, like that one clip that came up back when they put out that opening clip to show what they were doing.
It's ridiculous what the Wozniak guy looks like. Looks nothing like Wozniak ever looked in his life. Like, in those days, Wozniak was kind of he wasn't a fat dude, but he wasn't rail thin. He was kind of an average size dude, and he had a beard, and he had kind of long hair, not like crazy long hair. The dude in the movie is overweight and has like this huge frizzy mop of hair, like way longer than Wozniak's ever was, and just like all frizzed out and crazy.
Didn't real Wozniak have a whole bunch of stuff to not nicely say about that movie, or am I thinking of someone else?
Wozniak, this is what's interesting about Wozniak. Wozniak never says anything bad about anything. So when he was asked to comment on the movie, He talked about how he found it entertaining. He thought all the actors did a great job, but he wouldn't recommend it. So the fact that he ended his review with, "I wouldn't recommend it," from a guy that never says anything bad about anyone or anything, just...
It's fairly damning.
It seems crazy. Like, how bad is this if Wozniak couldn't not just be completely supportive and positive about it? And then, like, when you see interviews with Ashton Kutcher and stuff, Kutcher goes on and on about, like, "I studied Steve Jobs. Like, I learned to walk like he walked." And, like, his whole thing was, like, how great of an actor he is to have captured and studied Steve and how accurate that is. Meanwhile, this dude over here playing Wozniak's like, "Whatever, I got frizzy hair. I'm crazy Steve Wozniak."
"Call me the Woz."
And then I heard something about how, I guess, and maybe this is incorrect information, but what this one person I was listening to was saying was, that was intended to be a made-for-TV movie, and at some point they decided to release it in theaters. So it's made-for-TV movie, like poor made-for-TV movie quality, passed off as a film, where I think Pirates of Silicon Valley is a great TV movie that could have been a feature film.
I just feel like, when I saw the poster Jobs, I was like, it's not like it happened yesterday, but I feel like the period of time before which you make a movie about the guy who just died has not ended yet.
Oh, they had a dude on This Week in Tech. He said he saw the movie in a theater in Cupertino, which is where the Apple headquarters is, with Apple employees who knew Steve Jobs. And he said he talked to them after the film. And, like, "So you guys knew Steve. What did you think?" And they said everything was blown out of proportion with how Steve acted. Like, when they showed Steve being nasty, yelling at the employees, Steve, they made him look like Satan on Earth. And when he was artistic, benefactor, loving Steve, they made him seem like a saint amongst men. So they just said that both sides of Steve's personality were overblown.
Yeah. I am unsurprised to hear that.
And then there's another Steve Jobs movie coming. And it seems the Hollywood thing when two studios are basically making the same movie, whichever one comes out first tends to be lower quality.
Well, yeah, I heard that Wozniak was more in touch with whatever the other movie is. Like, that's what the Wikipedia chicken scratch said, anyway. That's as far as I went. Anyway.
See Pirates of Silicon Valley. That movie's great.
I want to. And that's a perfect place for us to bring this podcast to an end. We talked a whole lot about movies about Steve Jobs. So,
In Saints Row.
That's right. Which I'm not in.
What's up with that?
Well, I pointed it out, and someone someone said, maybe you just don't know you're in it. And I had to specify, like, the vehicle through which myself and DJ Enigma appeared in Saints Row the Third, the method by which we appeared does not exist in Saints Row 4. And I 100%ed a whole lot of Saints Row 4, whatever that 100% means. So I'm pretty sure I'm not in there.
You didn't really expect to be in there, right?
No, I didn't. But the question keeps coming up.
Yeah. Would you have felt weird about it if you were?
If I was in there again, then I think I would have more heavily began petitioning to know who the hell I know that's working on it, that isn't telling me that they know me. Because if I showed up at Saints Row 4, I would have felt like it wouldn't have been... As it is right now, I feel like if I start pushing Volition, going like, hey, why am I in the game? Why am I in the game? Then it would be kind of like a dick move. But if I show up in two of them... Yeah, if I showed up in another one, then I'd feel more justified to go like, hey, listen.
Well, asking about it the first time, I think, would have been appropriate. But now asking, why am I not in it again?
That's not what weird. I mean. That would be an asshole move either way. What I mean is, like, if I was in it in Saints Row 4 as well, I'd feel less weird about asking them what's up. Because the first time I feel like I should just leave it alone, because obviously it's a fun little Easter egg. But if it happened again, I'd be kind of like, all right. Like,
well, and whoever made that happen in 3 could not work there anymore.
Yeah.
They could not even be there anymore.
I know.
Or they decided, I did that joke. I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah, and I suspect they're still there, but it's really because I know the base root of where this came from. The DJ Enigma factor is the big key that this is all based on our experiences on one server in City of Heroes doing an internet radio show. That's where the root is, which makes the pool of people who potentially could be responsible extremely small. But I also don't want to out them, and I've left it to the point of, like, if they ever want to tell me, I would love to know, but I'm not going to push for it.
I bet that there's somewhere in that game a reference to somebody that nobody is going to get except for that person and people who know that person for whatever the reference is. I bet there's somebody in there somewhere that is that equivalent.
Yeah. I'll find out someday. My own way. Anyway, thank you all for listening, ladies and gentlemen. That's been myself. That's Seth Buzzard. That's WTFTFW. And we'll be back again. So stay tuned. Things might get a little Asian in this house, but I don't know if that's just me.
It's already a little Asian in your house.
I know. Chopsticks.